we were in the midst of those. I must admit, even to me, it sounds a little bit gobbledygook. So if I could just have an explanation of that entire clause there, please. Just explain.
It's very simple. The body corporate is not in South Africa the owner of the common property, nor of the sections. And therefore, in order to give them an insurable interest, this is a statutory provision which gives them the status in law to insure something that they don't actually own. In order to get cover from an insurance company, you need in South African law to have what is known as an insurable interest. That means that you have to have some real risk of your own associated with that property. I can't go and insure your car with an insurance company, because if it gets burnt, I don't suffer any loss. So if I want to take out insurance, the contract of insurance, the risk bet that you make with a financial institution, which is known as insurance, if I want to do that, I've got to establish an insurable interest. In this particular case, we have this rather unusual, or not unusual, this is the situation where the body corporate must make sure and preserve the common property and the sections, but it is not the owner of the common property and the sections. So you have to say that they have an insurable interest. You have to say that they have the right in law to be party to a contract, this bet about whether something's going to happen to it or not. This gives you the basis upon which you can enter into such a contract.
I understand now, but like I say, it's still legalese language. What it says is, as the presenter indicated to you, I've got no interest in law in your vehicle, so I cannot go to an insurance company and insure your car. And therefore, this paragraph gives the body corporate, almost identifies them as because they now the guardians of the property. They're saying that because they're really the guardians on behalf of all of them, they have that legal interest to insure it on behalf of everybody. That's how I understand it, and it makes sense there.
Madam Chairperson, maybe one can add at the end, although they are not the owners of the land and the body. No? Okay.
Yeah, I think it makes total sense, because I know in KZN currently there is a dispute and discrepancy about market-related value, and they're utilizing a letter of authority from the Department of Justice at the moment in terms of to tie up the legalities to have rights over that property in terms of insurance. So that's all in accordance.
Okay, Chairperson, I understood my comrade here, Honorable Stein. For information's sake, if it happens that the owner of that property maybe lost her financial whatever, then he is unable to contribute to the funds, the body corporate fund, then how is he assisted? Oh, thank you, Chair.
This is exactly why there is a statutory obligation on the body corporate to keep the common property and all the sections. It's the only time that this Act doesn't talk about sections and common property, but talks about the building. So there's an obligation on the common on the body corporate to ensure that the building is insured to its full replacement value, at least against fire, at all times. So even in the situation where somebody can't afford, because they've fallen on hard times, to make their payment, that doesn't excuse the body corporate from insuring. Also, if your section's on the ground floor and it breaks and I'm above you, then your failure affects me. Buildings of this sort are interdependent, so they've got to always be insured.
Well, page 7 now, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, powers of bodies corporate. For the body corporate may exercise the powers conferred upon it by or under this Act or the rules, and such powers include the power A to appoint such agents and employees as the body corporate may consider fit.
Let's say to why can't we say the body corporate may exercise the powers conferred upon it by or under this Act rules, because the rules are for this Act, but there are regulations that are not here. Why can't we also include the regulations?
Okay. Chair, perhaps I'm out of order because I actually want to answer your question. Well, when we defined the Act, because I specifically referred to it, this Act that said includes regulations. So the definition of the Act, so...
Okay.
Just to address it, because I was actually looking for this clause, I remembered reading it, but I didn't highlight it. This is also where some of my colleagues or comrades earlier said the body corporate must organize the training or the education. Yeah, if the body corporate so requests, that first one says to appoint such agents and employees as the body corporate may consider fit. So I would imagine under agents, if they decide they want to appoint somebody to give some sort of training, that's where they raise it, and the body corporate is in, it's part of their functions.
The issue of such agents, managing agents, I'm having a problem because it could depend to the number of units. So can it be specifically mentioned maybe if there are more than 10?
Honourable Chair, that provision, if it is to be made, would logically be made in the prescribed rules. That is, the Act at the moment doesn't deal with managing agency at all.
Before we continue, you know, I've got vested interest in this thing. I think now I'll join honourable members who own this property. I wanted to understand first. So that's why I'll always take you back. For information's sake, if I improve the interior of my property, we all know that the value will be, and it will be more than the other properties. Then who will be able to pay that? Is my property going to be insured higher than the others? Or how will it be? Thank you.
If you wish it to be insured at a higher value, you can arrange that. What will happen is that the body corporate, in preparation for the annual general meeting, will put together a schedule of proposed insured values covering each and every unit in the entire scheme. You will get that, and you will get that probably 30 days or 14 days before the meeting. If you then, or at any later stage, choose, because you've had expensive painting inside your flat, you want a higher value attributed to your particular section, then you tell the body corporate that. This is now in terms of the prescribed management rules, but then you pay the additional premium. So I'm afraid they're not going to subsidize your Michelangelo paintings. It is under that because the body corporate is arranging the insurance, and when it does that, it gives you information as to how this will affect you. If you want to change, it's exact. You can't say, I want to be insured for less, but you can say, I want to be insured for more. If you think the body corporate is being too conservative in their estimation of replacement value, you can say, no, I don't want to be averaged when this claim is in fact paid out, and you can have the amount attributed to your particular section increased as long as you bear the associated cost. That is in terms of the prescribed management rule 29 at the moment, which, as the Honourable Chair said, is going to come back to you in due course.
When I buy a flat unremarkable, the bank automatically insures.
Yes. The bank does not automatically insure it.
No, Chair, I was asking if this this explanation that was given here, is it over and above what I'm paying? Because if I have a unit, I pay insurance anyway in a block. By back, especially if you still have a mortgage. So I'm saying, when the body corporate insures the common property, it's levy, is it going to ask me to pay additional over and above what I'm paying for my property? Is that
when you buy a sectional title unit, and no new insurance policy is required, all your bank does is check that there is adequate insurance. There is the possibility that the holder of that mortgage, the bond holder, might say, I'm not happy with the amount for which your unit that you've now bought and have now mortgaged to that bank is insured, and they might therefore say, I want you to top it up. They might instigate that process I spoke of a minute ago. But when you buy a sectional title unit, it is not normal for the bank to, because you can't insure your own unit. It must be the body corporate that insures it.
Chair, maybe I should have a seat that side as well and just jump across. There is another clause 30 in comrade, for your Michelangelo paintings. There is another clause 13, insurance by owners, where you all can also take out the additional insurance for internal, what you're doing internally. And like I say, I'll just switch seats as and when it's necessary. Or perhaps, Chair, at the fee, I can do a workshop next term after we finish with the bill.
Yeah, Chair. I think it all boils down. Firstly, for people, I don't have any conflict of interest. I don't have any flat. It all boils down, Chair, that the knowledge that is given to people, like you need to protect your investment. That is the main thing one should do. But you'll find that in common cause, that as we discussed earlier on in terms of trustees, these are the informations when they hold their regular meetings, etc., to disseminate this kind of information. Because if they want progressive communities, they indeed have to be active, proactive. So it's about knowledge. Good.
Thank you, Chair. Pass of Bodies Corporate, number C. Thank you, Chair. To buy a life required by it in the performance of its functions, or the exercise of his powers.
To borrow money is another issue now. So somebody is not able to, therefore there is some trustees or the owners to borrow money on behalf of other people who does not know exactly what's going on. To borrow money is something else.
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Machoba. Honorable Machoba, Chairperson, covered me partly. I'm a little bit worried about this. We know that when you borrow money, there's interest charge. Is this not going to affect the owner's pockets? Thank you, Chair.
They did cover, Madam Chair.
Honorable
because Bula, I was okay. Thinking of fundraising, not to borrow.
Honorable Bula?
It must be expressed, Chair, that it will have a legal impact and also that they could land themselves in financial crisis as well.
Why can't we locate this to the trustees, this function?
Chairperson, that would in fact make the situation worse than it is at the moment, because you have the executive making a decision that has a direct financial impact on each individual owner. There is no doubt that borrowing without careful consideration has proved to be a problem in South Africa, but may I suggest to you that if you simply said, if so determined by special resolution, you would then to leave it where it belongs, which is with the body of owners, but make sure that you got 75% in number and value. Now, in that situation, there are genuinely situations in which a body corporate must borrow. If, for example, 20% of the owners aren't paying levies, you still have to pay the municipality the water and the electricity. So there are situations where cash flow requires a borrowing. But I think the special resolution thing might just clear it.
Don't say I was maybe I'm covered. I'm still nervous about it because about the borrowing part. I don't know what would protect the owners from carrying that burden if the body corporate is unable. I mean, if you have defaulters, then defaulters can increase. If you're going to borrow to finance the shortfall in your budget because people are not paying, you're actually getting deeper and deeper into crisis. So that's really where I don't know the answer to this, but I'm very uncomfortable.
Chairperson, I understand, but I understand Honorable Porter's concern, but there is also, let's say this body corporate is new, the properties are new, and then they don't have enough in their reserve. Maybe that can apply. I don't know how to put it. But if you think broader, it might be practicable to do that. Thank you, sir.
I'm somewhat covered because I'm comfortable with this because I thought it was implied by being under the body corporate. The body corporate includes all the owners. But it tightens it up if we actually aid there by special resolution, which means it must go through that process, the owners must be aware of it, and to raise some of the issues earlier where people said they want swimming pools and they want facilities for children and so on, the body corporate may very well decide, well, we now want to put in a swimming pool and we need to borrow the money. So it's for an eventuality. It doesn't say they must do it, you know, really money. So I'm comfortable if we aid in the special resolution part of it.
Thank you, Chair. I think to add on that, I think it is quite also important, thank you, for the honourable members to also bear in mind that under the powers and, you know, under the powers of, you know, body corporate, these are the functions that they may exercise. You know, and they may exercise those particular functions from time to time as the occasion requires them to do that. It's not a must perform function. that they must perform these particular functions. These are the non-performance functions which they can perform, you know, as the occasion requires and when it's necessary for them to perform those functions. Yes, and sometimes it comes down to they may not perform those particular functions. But as the occasion requires, because in the mind that as the occasion requires, then they can perform those particular functions.
Let me check section 4. That sentence there on top, the body corporate may exercise the powers conferred upon it by or under this act or rules. And such powers include the power to. If we can remove, I don't know how to put it, but this.
But your question now is on this, they may or they may not. What are you querying?
Person include the powers to. Include the power to. Does this, what I want to say, Chaperson? If we say it must not be, they must not do it if the need arises. But on top here, it says the powers include the power. Maybe I don't understand it.
Can I perhaps try and deal with that? This is an entity which has no existence except as you give it in terms of this act. So if you want it to be a possibility that it might do something, you've got to say so. All of these, if you didn't say this, they wouldn't have the power. So if you ever want a body corporate to be able to borrow or to do any of these things, you have to say so in here. I don't think there's I don't fully understand the problem that you're having, but this is not a problem in practice.
I don't understand the owner from the Doris now. When you say the power to. The power to borrow my money and require funds. The power to borrow money. If we that's why we are so much concerned about the to borrow. Cause on top of the include the powers to borrow. If maybe there was the better. But now that they have been given powers to borrow.
Yes, I just want them to. Chairperson, I just want them to make me understand this, because here we are saying to borrow. It must not be a compulsory that they must do it. Then, yes, we are saying it that it must not be compulsory. But the problem that I have is that here on top it says. Such powers include the powers to. What I advise as Chairperson is that they might abuse this situation. Because here, if only we can say Chairperson here, powers to borrow. No, if we can start the sentence with why applicable, they may. I don't know.
Makasinyeka advocate benzeza ukuza ukuthi mina why singafakeni ushala because
ushala because makasinyeka advocate ukuza. Chair, I think the phrase there is may. And may is discretionary. It means that they can choose either to or not, of course, depending on circumstances. The other person is having a problem with the word include. Which indicates that this list is not exhaustive. There are other powers that they may decide to perform. And that is answered by I. If you look at I, it says to do all things reasonable necessary for the enforcement of the rules and for control, management and administration of the common property. That I is relating to that include. which indicate that this is not an exhaustive list.
I think, Chair, by having added, I think we mustn't lose sight that we've now asked for them to add that by special resolution. So even though it's a power for them, they can't just do it unless that 75% or whatever it is of the owners agree to something like that. So there is a safeguard, but it does mean giving the possibility of them as a body to agree to go and borrow money.
Thank you, Chair. One of the other powers includes to ensure the record of monies borrowed by it. Okay. To secure the record of monies borrowed by it and the record of interest thereon by the total bond over unpaid contributions, whether valid or not, or by obtaining money property vested in it. Three, to be vested on the fund referred to in section 3 to enter into an agreement with any owner or occupier of a section for the provision of amenities or services by the body corporate to subsection or to the owner or occupier thereof, including the right to let a portion of the common property to any such owner or occupier by means of a lease of a lease other than the not contemplated in section 5(1)(a).
Chair, just a point of clarity here. Does this give the body corporate and by implication then the trustees the right to lease a portion of the common property to any one individual owner? Now, again, the question comes back, well, should it then not be also by a special resolution? Because the concern that comes in there is what has it happened in the past when a one individual has proxy and thereby takes control of the trustees and can then use this to benefit him or her or a specific individual by letting them have the lease of the common property which belongs to everybody for the benefit of one person.
Madam Chair, this is, as Honourable Stain points out, an innovation into this thing, which is in fact an exception to the general rule. You know, the body corporate doesn't own the common property; it's owned by all the individual owners. And this, so therefore, in all other circumstances, all the owners must be involved in, for example, in giving exclusive use rights or of either type. Because of the interplay between this and a subsequent provision, it can be just the trustees who decide to lease a portion as long as it's less than 10 years. The second it's for 10 years or longer, again, in terms of that cross-reference provision 5(1)(a), you need a unanimous resolution. But if you said including upon a special resolution of owners the right, then it would work in exactly the way in which you're asking it to.
Enforcement of the rules and for the control, management, and administration of the common property. Yeah,
just a question again, are we changing the word control for regulation?
Yeah,
my notes, I had an addition of providing training for trustees and members of body corporate, but I don't know if we have agreed that you're going to work that money for Rwanda. Because it is here in my notes.
We'll cross reference this. Thank you, Chair. We'll now deal with the additional powers of bodies corporate. 5.1. In addition to the body corporate's main functions, powers under Section 3 and 4, the body corporate may, upon another resolution, on direction by the owners, and on direction concern of any matter of a right of extension contemplated in Section 25 of the Sectional Titles Act, and on common property or any part thereof, or let the common property or any part thereof are lease, and thereupon the body corporate may, subject to Section 71 of the Sectional Titles Act, deals with such common property or such part thereof in accordance with the direction and will execute any debt required for this purpose, including any debt required under the Sectional Titles Act.
Sorry, Chair, I just want to find that on A, may appoint anonymously. Can we change that to majority? I think that will be simple.
No.
Chairperson. But we had a problem last time, I don't know, with this thing of not voting, then you are regarded as...
So we told them that we disagree totally with it. We cannot put somebody who has not voted. Because if we are having 75%, that is 75%, but without counting that person with who has abstained, hayi nalapha eparlamente siyavota xa kukha u-abstainile uyatsho ukuthiwa unomhledamean ubandi. We have got so many people who have voted in favor of this, we have got so many people who have voted against it, we have got so many people who have abstained. So akubalwa loo nto leyo, we're not going to count that one.
Chairperson, we have found a solution to that which will address your problems. On this particular one, a majority vote to dispose of a portion of the common property is frankly not sensible. If your suggestion would, in practice, allow just 50% of the people to cut off a part of the property and sell it to someone else, that's something everybody's property is involved in. You must therefore, even though a unanimous resolution doesn't have to be always truly unanimous, you do need a very high level of consensus.
Thank you, Chair.
Just a clarification. In this case, it refers to, I know this whole thing is about body corporate, but if the property is still owned by the developer, he owns the whole block of flats, does this apply?
No, this doesn't apply because there's no body corporate in that case. Okay. So you may have a sectional title register open, but the body corporate only comes into being when there's more than one owner.
Okay. But he can apply for the subdivision and whatever, all of that.
Yes, he can. There will be some other things under the Deeds Registries Act for the transfer and under the Sectional Titles Act for a new plan, amendment of plan and various other things, but he can do it all by himself.
Okay. He is the sole owner now. there are also people who are, because this lady who was saying the owner of this building is overseas. He's actually not even here.
What she said was the owner of that particular unit was overseas. That was an operating sectional title scheme in which there were already a multiplicity of interests. There were lots of different people who had ownership rights. Therefore, there was a body corporate in place there.
While on that one of Mrs. Ditlek, what role is the body corporate playing there? Because the owner of that unit is not there. But he's part of the body corporate, if I understand. So what role is the body corporate supposed to play to assist her in whatever problem that she has?
The body corporate's essential role is to look after the scheme in general. It is not there to look after a particular owner's flat or assist a tenant. Essentially, people must protect themselves. The body corporate is not necessarily at fault in the situation. Mrs. de Klerk's fundamental difficulty was that she was out of kilter with the rest of the owners. She couldn't get other owners to agree with her as to how much should have been put in the fund, and there was no minimum requirement. So she felt badly that there hadn't been enough money, but in fact she didn't have the support of the other owners. That was her fundamental difficulty.
I think it is important, the issue of a person who's abroad. How does it that issue addressed? How can it be addressed? Because you are referring to the owners. At least it's better if you are sitting there like Honorable Day. He is going to be responsible. He's going to be a responsible member of the body corporate. He's going to be a responsible member of the body corporate. Bongi, uyandiva. Sithinya lo muntu obhele wathenga indlu, wahamba wayaphesheya, washiya ke ngona ke i-tenants. Kulapho ke ngona ke i-body corporate members. Sizaba ne-challenges. What do we do? Lo muntu uliphatha, where does that person pay levies? How does that situation managed? Can you assist us? Because that is very much important. We're not saying people must not buy, because it is buy properties. It is their right to buy a property. But that issue has to be taken seriously. As he is a member here, how do we ensure that irresponsibility is okay as an owner? We are honoring.
Can I respond quickly, Chairperson, before? Can I respond quickly? It's a private matter, Chairperson. There's nothing that this committee can do about it. And it's within the control of the body corporate, because the owner who's overseas is a member of the body corporate. So whatever steps that need to be taken need to be done, dealt with within the body corporate itself. So that we need to understand that's a private matter. That is strictly a private matter. The arrangement between the owner and the tenant, you know, there's nothing that concerns, you know, it's between the two people concerned, and also the body corporate concerned.
I say so, because this is the act that is protecting people, because tenants are exploited, because these buildings are not serviced. So what are we saying for that person who has bought a property and leave? What is the responsibility? Because this is a sort of an association. The body corporate to me is such a sort of an association of some kind. This is an association of some kind. And as something on the new child. So then we are going to get. But we have to regulate, there has to be a regulation to manage njani indawo zethu so that zingabonakali the exploiter abanye abantu.
I was going to say, you see, whilst a body corporate is an association, it's not as voluntarily as other associations, in the sense that once you buy into the scheme, once you buy a unit in the scheme, you are actually, by virtue of your being an owner, bound by the rules of the body corporate. And therefore you have to pay the levies, you've got to honor everything. However, what happens inside your unit, to the extent that you have rented it out, is your relationship with the tenant. It has nothing to do with the body corporate. So, but to the extent that you have got obligations to contribute to the maintenance and upkeep of the general common ground, you are bound and you can be sued for not, or your property can be attached for not complying with the levy. Yeah. That happens anyway as it stands now.
Tenant must be able, even if he is challenging the owner, even he can refer the matter to the body corporate, whoever, or to the ombudsperson, because even the tenant is sitting there, he's renting. He has got, let's make sure that even the tenants don't have rights, although, I mean, yes, they are covered by this act.
I just want to amplify what Toza said. I agree fully. There's two issues here that we need to look at, which the state law advisor also referred to. The one issue is an agreement between the owner and the tenant. And that refers to what happens inside the unit. And if a tenant has problems with the owner, we've got the rental tribunal that they can take the owner to in terms of what goes on inside. What happens outside is the functions of the body corporate. Now, in instance, the clerk's case, for example, I think if, let's assume there's 100 owners, she's worried that they're not maintaining the buildings. But unfortunately, the other 99 owners doesn't seem to worry about it. Because even if an owner is overseas, the rest of the body corporate can still take resolutions and still maintain the building and hold him or her accountable.
What in the world would maintain
at the moment, sir? It tells you, and what we've now done, the problem with that, Mrs. the clerk's complex is...
I'm not talking about the clerk now. I'm talking about what we are saying now.
No.
It is here, but even when I mentioned people who are abroad, the owners.
But that is why even a special resolution says 75%. So if you've got 20% that's overseas, the rest of the people can still make a decision and say they want. And we've now tightened it by enforcing that there must be a maintenance fund.
Let's not take it for granted. It must be mentioned the owner who's abroad must be accountable by this legislation to ensure...
Chairperson, that what you want is there. It may not specifically say the owner abroad, but it, for example, it's a few things taken together. Firstly, it's the clear obligation of the body corporate to maintain all the common property.
It's clear because we do have those challenges. You can insert it. You will see how to do it. There must be specifics at that stage. Honorable...
Chairperson, Chairperson, I'm lost here. What I wanted to understand is that I'm a tenant in Mr. Porter's flat. Then I have a problem with Mr. Porter. He doesn't attend to my needs. And this is affecting me a lot. So, who must force Mr. Porter to renovate my flat or to address the problem that I have?
The Rental Housing Tribunal has specific jurisdiction to do exactly that. And so if a tenant's difficulty is with the landlord, the Rental Housing Tribunal is the correct one. If the tenant's difficulty is with the body corporate, then at the moment there's nothing in here, but that's specifically in the Community Scheme Ombuds Service, I think you're entitled to relief. So there is always somewhere you can go in terms of this suite. But
if that body is not granted,
Chair, I think what is important is for us to provide that the distinction between the chair of the body corporate and also an additional that falls within a legal ground before we are out on the tenant. Because if I am a tenant and enter into a disagreement, when the owner of the property on this side to sell out is whether or not it is a property, but when the government is under the lease, you are under a lease contract, but when the tenant is with the owner of the relationship between the owner of the tenant, if it is under the lease contract, the government is under the lease contract, but when the government is under the lease contract, rather than the legal ground. What's the common relationship between the landlord and the tenant? In that very dispute, that relates to a lease contract between a landlord and a tenant. But the future has to refer the answer to the government under it. But if there is a separate contractual issue and matter, which is of a lease contract, and there is a dispute of a lease between the landlord and the tenant, then the tenant must, of course, not be required to refer the matter to the landlord and the tenant.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. I'm looking there, number I, to do all things reasonably necessary for the enforcement. It means they can also sue them.
Yes. You asked specifically
where is it? And just, that's one of them, but if you also look at clause 3.2, yes, liability for contributions levied under any provision and may be recovered by the body corporate. So whether you're in Timbuktu or you're around the corner, if you owe, the body corporate can get the money back. Doesn't matter where you are if you're the owner. So it is in here in terms of the owner in getting that money back.
Chairperson, to add on what I've been saying in number two, the body corporate by action in any court.
You've changed it.
Yeah. Okay.
The fact that they've got the power to get it back.
Thank you, Chair. Must, with the written consent of all the members of the body corporate, as well as the written consent of the mortgagee of each unit in the scheme, alienate or in terms of the sectional titles act, exercise or cede a right of extension of the scheme by the addition of sections, provided that a member or a mortgagee may not withhold such approval without good cause in law.
I don't know, Chair, maybe I'm going to be difficult, because must means a forced. Can't we change that to may instead of must?
That has already been changed in the proposed amendment.
One. He's saying members of the body corporate. I think before we change it to owners. I was just disputing the body corporates to owners.
Themes.
May, with the written consent of all the members of the body corporate, as well as the written consent of the mortgagee of each unit in the scheme. So when I suggest what must delete one. Some we have deleted the must may.
Thank you, Chair. C may enter into a bilateral notarial agreement with the registered bondholders to extend the period stipulated in the condition referred to in Section 25(1) of the Sectional Titles Act to extend the scheme by the addition of sections and exclusive use areas, or by addition of exclusive use areas only. D may, subject to subsection 2, purchase land to extend the common property if duly authorized thereto in writing by all of its members. E may request the demolition and cession of exclusive use rights to particular owners in terms of section 27(2). Of the Sectional Titles Act, if duly authorized thereto by another resolution. F. May, upon special resolution by the owners, execute on behalf of the owners a servitude or a rest- chief agreement, Bedouin Nelson, and the relevant sexual plan, and may assert on their behalf a pharmaceutical restrictive agreement benefiting such land as contemplated in section 21, in terms of section 29 of the Sectional Titles Act. J. Must, on application by an owner, and duly authorize thereto by special resolution of its members, approve the extension of boundaries of floor areas of a section. H. May generally.
Chair, I think the must, we have to change that must to may or shall.
To be a mark was here to be abide by that resolution.
H may generally exercise any power and perform any function conferred or imposed on the body corporate in terms of this act or sectional titles act. 2. Land purchased by body corporate in terms of subsection 1D must be registered in the name of the body corporate in terms of the Sectional Titles Act and the Deeds Registries Act, 1973, Act number 47 of 1937. And B. As I mentioned, we have agreed before. Yes. B is considered to be owned by the owners of sections in the building concerned in the same proportion as their participation quota as contemplated in section 60, in terms of section 26.2 of the sectional title set. Agreed?
If that is considered to be owned by the owners of sections in the building, what happens when the owner sells the one? Is there any benefit accruing to the owners individually? If, say, they incorporated a portion of land they bought and a value accrues on that piece of property, does the owner or individual owners have a share in that scheme?
Because of this distinction between the members themselves and the body corporate, if you register in terms of this provision a piece of land in the name of the body corporate, they are, this used to be deemed, that this is, they're considered to be the owners, but they aren't really the owners. So when you sell, you have to get the value for that in the price you get for your unit, because the new person who takes over ownership of your unit will then be in the same position and be considered to be one of the co-owners of that land. So you will not be able to, it's not a separate legal object, you won't be able to sell it, you won't be able to transfer it, but you will be able to get value for your share of that in terms of your sale of your unit.
If the body corporate buys land, is that referred to a community scheme? Because this is a, that is a community. No, just for my understanding.
This will always be a sectional title scheme, and if the body corporate buys land, all sectional title schemes are community schemes in terms of that other bill, but.
Got the right to buy a land. They bonke bavumelane. And it chose another.
Chair, question. What I want to understand here, is it a joining land or any other piece of land available somewhere? Thank you.
For what? For extension of the...
This would typically be if, for example, you wanted to create that playground or something like that. It could be adjoining, and most typically would be adjoining, but it doesn't have to be adjoining. It could be anywhere, and so no, it doesn't have to only be next door.
No, sure. I know this is a very tricky one because in the purchase of that adjoining piece of land, which the body corporate may deem to be increasing the value of your current property, now they may call on the owners to make a contribution. Now, therefore, you have made a contribution. It could be, say, there's a special levy or special whatever contribution by special resolution, you know, of 50,000 per person. Now, you sell your unit, and by the definition of this, you are not a direct owner, but you are indirectly a share, by virtue of your ownership, a shareholder in that. So you are saying the only way you can recover that cost is by putting value on your flat when you sell your flat, because that person would be the one who takes over would have the equal share in the new property. What if later on this new land, the extended land, is a piece of land next to you, you want it, and the developer, I don't know if the body corporate can do it, but they want to put up another block of flats or something on that land. What happens? Now, you have a value. Are you saying even in that, you have nothing?
Once you've sold your unit, you will have nothing. And the
Now, currently, I'm still an owner. I still have my unit, and there's a decision to now extend whatever, put a new structure into that superstructure on top of the new land.
In terms of Section 4.1 of the Sectional Titles Act, you are not entitled to erect additional units on a separate piece of land until you've incorporated it into the original one. So that's never going to be a problem. It's going to be it's going to be dealt with under the existing Sectional Titles Act.
No, I was assuming that once you buy it, you in any case incorporate it as one of the what? Because your rights are vested in the current property that you own.
This is getting pretty deep for what we're doing, but in essence, let me answer your question. You can buy it and vest it in the body corporate, or as an alternative procedure, you can incorporate it into the sectional title scheme. You can extend the sectional plan by the incorporation of an additional piece of land. At that time, it ceases to be owned by the body corporate, and it's incorporated as additional common property. At that point, you could take under Section 25 of the Sectional Titles Act future extension rights out, and you could build your additional sections and extend the scheme again by the creation of new sections. But we are talking fairly deep stuff here.
Okay.
No, I think this one, here it is said, may generally exercise any power and perform any function conferred or imposed on the body corporate in terms of this Act or Sectional Titles Act. Apogeba se refera to subsection 2, basically land purchased by a body corporate in terms of subsection 1D may be registered in the name of the body corporate in terms of Sectional Titles Act and the deed register. That one is covered, but I think the issue up the issue here, Gaga Section 1D, Pindi Pabu D, that some civil Kunanagayagle, concern Yako. May subject to subsection 2 purchase land to extend the common property. Here it is straightforward. If duly authorized thereto in writing by all of its members. So here it is straightforward that additional land will be purchased for common property. Am I right, Prof?
It's not technically part of the common property because there's a definition of common property in the Sectional Titles Act, but it's deemed it or it's considered to be as if it were the common property.
Thanks, Chair. Okay. Thanks very much. Now I do concur with them, the professor, that this one is deeper than that. What we thought it is, that we have to consult broader now.
Now what worries me here, we put things, and then when we get to the explanation, we tend to get deeper on things that are going to raise problems. I don't know. As Honourable Porter was raising this question, but we are answering the question amongst ourselves here. That question won't be, I don't know. For an ordinary person, who's going to answer this question for him or her?
Madam Chair, what's happening here is that the body corporate is buying the land on behalf of all the owners. And then, you know, they could have said, and it must be registered, not in the name of the body corporate, but in the name of all the owners, as co-owners. But somehow, the deeds registry didn't want that when this thing was amended. Or they construed it this way. And then therefore they had to get the deeming provision that everyone will be considered to own it in, you know, according to their participation quota, to be co-owners of shares in this land which has been added.
From a purely practical point of view, if you registered it in the name of the individual owners, when you sold your unit, you would also have to sell an undivided share in that particular piece, and that is what they avoid. By having it registered in the body corporate's name, you are considered to be an owner, but you're not really an owner, so when your successor entitled to your unit comes in, you don't have to register and pay transfer duty on another transaction. It's just automatic. It's something the body corporate owns. Can I just tell this House that this provision has never caused any sort of trouble. It's straightforward and it does operate properly.
any problem, then now we are here to change it now and then put it right.
No, I think we can pass it now, but it's something that, you see, I'm only beaten by the fact that the registrar doesn't want to accept the proposal, because for me I would have preferred that if I'm a shareholder in that particular piece of land, I can then sell my share when I move out. I mean, I have a property in a place where it says, if you buy a house or a stand and a boathouse, for example, just using that as an example, but it's you may not own a boathouse unless you own a stand. So automatically, if you sell the stand, you must sell the boathouse because you can't just go in and out and boat. Now, so...
But you deem to have a share, you know, so they try to... To rectify the position by
can we agree that this is a consent? We're not going to change. It's not our competency. But in our debate, let's raise this as a concern, as the portfolio committee, and then we call upon Parliament to vote. My consent
this thing here demand ne rural development, because this thing with us is a concern. Can we agree on that? Because we're not going to resolve it here. We're not going to resolve it here. During our debate, let's flag it for full debate.
Now at trustees of Body Corporate, 6.1, the functions and powers of the Body Corporate must, subject to the provisions of this Act, the rules and areas strictly imposed or direction given at the general meeting of the owners of sections, be performed and exercised by the trustees of the Body Corporate holding office in terms of the rules.
Trustees of Body Corporate, the functions and powers of the Body Corporate must, subject to the provision of this Act, the rules and any restriction imposed or direction given at the general meeting of the owners of such be performed and exercised by the trustees of the Body Corporate holding office in terms of these rules.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. In here, what I'm trying to indicate is that in performance of the functions, the trustees can simply perform the functions. You know, it's already been dealt with the Body Corporate. But however, it's very clear to say that if performing exercising those functions, the trustees of the Body Corporate, they are, of course, being duly appointed and holding office and so forth. Those are the conditions under which they can exercise those particular functions of the Body Corporate.
I raise and go to you role here not to put the comments to appoint trustees. Have we ever mentioned that good functions that? Oh, okay.
Chairperson. The honorable members here will have to bear with us because we are going to ask almost everything here. Chairperson, it doesn't say where and when the trustees are appointed. Just for general knowledge, please.
This is all regulated in the rules. So they are appointed from the first general meeting. You know, the owners must decide how many trustees they want to have, and then they must be elected.
That won't be included here, Chairperson, because it doesn't say anything about that. An ordinary person like myself, who's an owner, doesn't know when and how.
Yeah, but this is in terms of the rules, you know, the functions and powers subject. Okay. The rules provides for the appointment of the trustees, and there's always going to be trustees.
I've got something here, Prefect. I said
Section 9 talks about the rules.
I said a new definition should be added for trustees, ne? We have agreed upon that. To include a specified period for their term of office. Trustees could be appointed on a rotational basis. Their terms of office must always expire before the annual general meeting so that the nomination procedure for new members of the board can be made in a practical and timeless manner, preferably prior to the AGM, where other matters such as the financial statements. That is my new contribution to this. I don't know how we're going to fit in here. Whether we're going to fit it in the rules, I don't know.
Traditionally, the the meetings and the election of the executive has always been dealt with in terms of the rules. And the reason for that is quite simple. The accessional title schemes are of all sorts. And there are some schemes that are in fact part of very complex arrangements that don't have ordinary sets of trustees. If you, for example, have schemes in homeowners associations, very often you won't have ordinary trustees in the normal sense. They will be the people who are the executors of the homeowners association. So it has always been thought best to have those arrangements relative to the election of the executives in the rules. That allows the developer and later the body corporate to change that part of the governance documents to suit the particular scheme. It is true that an average residential block of flats will probably have a set of trustees in the normal sense exactly as they are set out in the rules, but a reason to put it into the Act would be to make it completely standard. A reason to leave it in the rules is to allow flexibility so that you can fine-tune the rules for a particular scheme.
Now, Chair, I just wanted to inquire. In terms of the rules, I can recall a situation on the ground. Does it make provisions for just in case you have a certain amount of group of people that are disillusioned in terms of the management? Does it make provisions for a vote of no confidence or something of that nature?
It doesn't make a provision for a vote of no confidence. What it does allow in terms of a specific rule is that if 25% of the owners get together, or if bondholders holding sufficient bonds, either of those groupings can require a general meeting. And at the general meeting, as long as you have given adequate notice of it, you can remove the trustees and replace them with the others.
Thank you, Chair. In addition to the functions contemplated in subsection 1, the trustees of the body corporate must receive and may consent to applications for subdivision of sections or consolidation of sections made by the owners of sections. Such consent must not unreasonably be withheld by the trustees. 3. For the purposes of an agreement in respect of the vehicles and boundaries of the common property required in terms of the Land Survey Act 1997, Act No. 8 of 1997, the trustees are deemed to be the owner of the land.
Chair, just a question of clarity. In all other aspects, we consider the body corporate to be the owners of common property and so on. Why are we, although the trustees represent the body corporate, why are we being specific to say the trustees are now deemed to be the owners of the land? Why don't we say the body corporate?
The short answer to that is we don't know. But my guess is that you have to have people who can sign documentation. That is a guess.
By electing the trustees, the body corporate is giving them certain powers, and one of those is to sign on their behalf. So I would still want to see rather the body corporate are being deemed to be the owners. And it means the trustees can sign on their behalf still.
Kabache.
Chairperson, I was going to say maybe we should check this because it's saying they are deemed to be the owner of the land only for the purposes of the agreement in respect of the beacons and boundaries and all of that. So we need to double check that act, what it says. Because it's for the purposes of that act, that's why they are deemed to be trustees, that's why they are deemed to be owners of the land. I'll have to check that. I'll have to check that, and maybe there is a reason why they are deemed to be owners. Thanks.
I'm willing to let the state law advisor check that, but among the beacons and the boundaries define your land.
Absolutely.
Define the entire property. So I'm still, but the state law advisor can check, but I'd like that flag there.
Yeah, no, Chair. That is precisely correct. If we're going to move away from that, it's going to change the entire impact of our what we want to digest. So we can't...
Let's save ourselves, and then we can come to be a working lunch.
Madam Chair, Fiduciary Conditional Trustees, 7-1. Each trustee of the corporate must pay the fiduciary relationship to the body corporate. 12. We find the adoption of the generality of the expression of fiduciary relationship. The provision of subsection 1 ordained that a trustee pay most relation to the body corporate act honestly in all good faith, and in particular, well, exercises of the powers and powers of this act in the interest for the benefit of the body corporate, and not act without or exceeding those powers. Most of all, there is a terrible conflict between his or her own interests and those of the body corporate, and in particular, while not receiving the same equal benefit, direct or indirect, from the body corporate or from any other person. Institute such for service within 1 month from the date of service of the notice, stating that if the body corporate fails to do so, an application to the court under paragraph B will be made.
Chair, just on a point of information, is this, for example, the type of step that Mrs. de Klerk can take?
I don't think, from my understanding of what Mrs. de Klerk's problem was, I don't think this would help her. This situation postulates, the situation here is where the body corporate has suffered a loss, or you are suffering also, and the body corporate won't do anything about it. So they need to take action against a third party. This is not about filling up the reserve coffers or doing the maintenance. This is about suing somebody for something. So, for example, if an insurance company didn't pay when there was a claim made, and you were directly and you wanted to make sure the body corporate sued the insurer. This is the sort of that's a better sort of example. Does that make sense? No, clearly not.
Yeah. It refers to 2.7. Now, clause 2.7d, for example, says arising out of the exercise of any of its powers. Now, one of the exercising of its powers is to keep the building, the common property, in good order. So
that's entirely right, but that paragraph begins when the owner is of the opinion that he or she and the body corporate have suffered damage or a loss.
Damage or loss from what?
Damage or loss from anyone, from anything that might happen under any of the cross-references to all the things that the body corporate is entitled to do. It's entitled to sue and to So in essence, the situation that they're trying to cover, perhaps not as well as you will cover it, is one where you need to take action against somebody, against a third party. When an owner is unable to exercise his own rights and wants to force the body corporate to take action against someone.
Let's put the on-put service here, and then the court will be the last one. Yeah, let's agree on that.
Madam, an example of such a case would be if the municipality working on the public street causes damage to their fellow tree, that's the case, and it falls on the common property. And then the body corporate doesn't take any action. Then any owner can say action should be taken.
Is if the body corporate fails to institute the procedures within the period referred to in paragraph A, the owner may make application to the court for an order appointing a curator at the time for the body corporate for the purpose of instituting and conducting proceedings on behalf of the body corporate.
The ombuds for A, and then if A is not assisting, then you can go to B. B is the court. Yeah, I think we are still on the right track. Continue.
Madam Chair, you don't have to bring the court in at all. You could leave it as an alternative, of course. But if you look at this, at the flow of this, if you just replaced the reference to court with reference to the ombud service, then the thing would work all the way through.
No, three. The court may okay. The court may, on such application, if it is satisfied that the body corporate is not instituted such proceedings, that there are prima facie grounds for such proceedings, or that an investigation into such grounds and into the desirability of the institution of such proceedings is justified. Appoint a provincial curator at the time and direct him or her to conduct an investigation into the matter and to report to the court on the return of the provincial order. Provisional order.
Just a question. If we're going to change from paragraph 2 to the ombudsman, then it stands to reason we should change this here to the ombudsman as well.
The so let's agree that Nina Ambanuwe 7 issue that document that are going to submit to us. It must clearly indicate that all those stages that we are saying we are agreeing off on the ombuds person, and then it can also fit when can the person or the body corporate approach the court. But now I like to see Fundangayo, yes, change. And no matter, are we all in agreement? Jesus.
I was going to respond to that, Chairperson. I was going to propose that let us not take away that right from the body corporate to approach the court. Let us have both. They must approach Chief Ombud or the court, depending on the circumstances. We mustn't just close it all together. They must have an option.
That is why I'm saying, sis. At the beginning, you can just go directly to the ombudsperson. But then, at least as it goes on, there is a need to approach the court. That is why I'm requesting at least let us jump to the ombudsperson. But we can have, again, as we go on, an allowance to approach the court. But the way it is now, we cannot unable now to detect at what stage can we approach the court as it is now. We cannot work it in relationship. It will need you guys. Nishale pants. Nilungis. Is it
thing? Sure, just a question again. In terms of clauses 3 to 7, and whether we put the court or the ombudsman, are we not in these clauses prescribing to, for example, the court what they may or may not do? The court may very well do something else to what we say they may do this or that. And if we need to keep it, should this go not in the case of the ombudsman, should it not go in the other bill where we say the ombudsman may do certain things? I'm just questioning where this belongs.
That is why I'm saying, Mr. Steen. As it is now, it's creating a confusion. Let them work the stages where the ombudsperson can be approached. Then if at this stage it cannot be solved by the ombudsperson, it can be referred to the court. That's what I'm saying. But as it is now, we cannot do it here up. It will take us ages.
to do it.
Yeah, Chen, I'm in total agreement with you. It's because if you work in that principle, you have continuity. Besides, there are certain category of people who are not financially sound. And if you bypass the ombuds and you go straight to the court, they have the financial muscle to serve a court order from the high court to any poor person. So I think the continuity is a very great notion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, the rules. One, a scheme or trust as from the bond of the establishment of the body corporate be controlled and controlled and made subject to the provisions of this Act by means of rules. Agreed? The rules must provide for the control, management, administration, use and enjoyment of sections and common property, and comprise 1A, moral rules as prescribed, which rules are subject to the approval of the chief or rights, B, substituted, and a 2, amended or repealed by the developer when submitting an application for the opening of a sexual title register to the extent prescribed by regulations, by regulation, and what laws may be substituted either to amended or repealed by one resolution of the body corporate as prescribed.
Mr. Saleh?
Chair, I think the change of control to regulation.
About the rules, added to amended or repealed by the developer when submitting an application for the opening of a sectional title register. To the extent prescribed by regulation, in which rules may be substituted, added to, amended, or repealed by unanimous resolution of the body corporate. I don't know if does this fit in. I wanted to talk about the registration of the sectional title. I was thinking of the certificate that is issued to the body corporate. I don't know where does it fit in. I'm not sure whether I'm confused here, but I was thinking of that because you submit an application. Can you help me, Professor?
Madam Chair, there are two certificates we're talking about. The one that you have just mentioned is there is a certificate which the Registrar of Deeds will give at the time that he registers the first transfer of a unit to a third party. That the effect in terms of Section 2.1 of this bill is that the body corporate comes into being. So that's the one certificate. And then the second certificate we're talking about has to be issued, in fact, before that. And that's the one we're dealing with here. That is when the developer says to the chief ombud, I want to open this register, and these are the schemes, and these are the rules that I want to make applicable to the scheme. And the chief ombud looks at them and says, yes, these are appropriate and applicable, and he issues a certificate that he approves those rules. That certificate then, in terms of the Sectional Titles Act, gets lodged in terms of Section 11 at the process of things. So this certificate, that the rules are in order, issued by the chief ombud, gets issued first, and the one by the registrar that the first transfer has been registered gets issued second.
Chairperson,
Currently, the rules are within the deeds office. Then, where are they going to be transferred to, the ombuds or where?
In terms of the Community Scheme Ombuds Service Act, one of the things that the Chief Ombuds Office does is take over the rules from the Registrar. The Registrar has not been looking at them since 1997, and they need to be looked at properly, and that's one of the purposes of the Chief Ombuds Office.
When are we going to look at them as the committee?
When are you going to look at what, Madam Chair?
Because you are saying they are in another department with the state office.
Madam Chair, they have historically this type of provision is currently in the Sectional Titles Act. It has been decided a long time ago that the Deeds Registry doesn't want to look after the rules anymore. But the provision that we're dealing with here in 9 is how you establish what rules will apply to a particular scheme at the time that you open the register.
I think you're referring to the regulations that the Minister will make that must come to, or that we'd like to have a look, which is different from the rules applicable to every sectional title complex.
Billy, conduct rules as prescribed, which rules may subject to the approval of the Chief Ombuds, be substituted, added to, amended or repealed by the developer while submitting an application for the opening of a sectional title register, and once rules may be substituted, added to, amended or repealed by the special resolution of the body corporate as prescribed, provided that such corporate rules may not be reconciled with all the scope management rules contemplated in paragraph A. So, the management of corporate rules contemplated in subsection 2 must be regularly applied according to all rules of units. The minimum required rules referred to in subsection 2 take effect from the date of establishment of the body corporate in respect of the building or buildings and land concerned, and by the body corporate in the owners of the sections and the concerned preparing a section.
Line 51, and bind the body corporate and the owners of the sections. Are we not really saying the same thing? The body corporate is the owners. So should we not say these are the owners?
Can I explain that? The body corporate's actions are formally through its executive. So you're wanting to bind both the body corporate in its official actions normally taken by the trustees and the individual owners in their personal capacity. There is value in the distinction in this particular case. And the occupiers, which includes tenants and anybody else.
The management of corporate trusts referred to in subsection 2 takes effect from the date of establishment of the body corporate in respect of the building or buildings and land concerned, and by the body corporate and the owners of the sections and any person occupying a section. 5. If the management or corporate trusts contemplated in subsection 2 are substituted, added to, amended or repealed, the developer or the body corporate laws lodge with the chief laws a notification in the prescribed form of such substitution, addition, amendment, or repeal. B. The chief counsel has examined any proposed substitution, addition, amendment, or repeal referred to in paragraph A and was not approved it for final analysis. He or she is satisfied about such substitution, addition, amendment, or repeal is available and appropriate to the scheme. If the chief counsel has approved the substitution, addition, amendment, or repeal of rules for filing, he or she must issue a certificate to that effect. A substitution, addition, amendment, or repeal of laws contemplated in paragraph A comes into operation on the date of the issue of a certificate contemplated in paragraph C or the opening of a sectional title register for the scheme, whichever is the latest. The body corporate must, on application of any owner or any person having a registered real right in or over a unit, or any person authorized in writing by such owner or person, make all rules available for inspection to such owner, person, or authorized person.
This clause comes back to our earlier discussion about the education of people. We again making it subject to the owner or the occupier to apply for these things. Shouldn't it be when a unit has been transferred and the new owner takes occupation, or there's a new tenant? Because somewhere else it said the body corporate needs to be informed of a tenant when it changes tenants, that they must give them these rules, rather than them having to. So if they never apply, they're never going to get it.
Chair, that suggestion is strongly supported. This thing isn't as clear, nearly as clear as it should be, that occupiers are entitled. And the idea of reversing it so that the body corporate is obliged to make the, and also, you know, you've got your occupiers are bound by the rules, but so they should also be entitled to see them. So that comment is strongly supported.
Application, Mrs. D.
Yeah, no, Chair, I think I'm partly covered. It becomes a responsibility. It must be that they disseminate the rules so that transition is taking place.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The body corporate must, on the application of any owner or any person, a developer or a body corporate must make rules which confer rights of exclusive use and enjoyment of parts of the common property upon members of the body corporate.
Chair, two issues, and again, perhaps it was read wrong. Not must make rules, may make rules, because that's how it reads, that's how I think we should keep it. But this refers to an earlier thing. There is a situation where the body corporate may give a member or members some special rights. This must only take place by special resolution. Once again, it's very similar to the earlier argument we had, where, you know, a few people on that body corporate can't just decide and give another person special rights over common property.
I'm not sure. Did we define the exclusive rights? I think. Have we defined it?
In the Sectional Titles Act, and it's referred
no,
to.
No. We have to define it here.
It as defined in the section.
No. We can redefine it here. Okay. This is our act. I'm not going to go to the Sectional Titles Act. When I'm reading this act, I'm are going to read this act. So let's define it, and then I think Mr. Stain's point, let's take it into consideration.
Oh, Madam, sorry, it is the point in this act, extensive use area.
I'm suggesting that we somehow put in by special resolution again, so that we don't leave it up to just a few people to confer on one or two selected people's special use.
Madam Chair, the response to that is, because it's an open-ended reference to make rules, it is currently applied on the basis that you can do it either by conduct or by management rules. You can't make rules other than in terms of this provision. And there are only two types of rules, management and conduct rules. So you're worried that the body corporate would, as a result of that phrase, be able to make rules on majority, for example, is not founded. But it is an unspecified reference. At the moment, it says you can do this by making rules, so you can do it by making conduct or management rules. If you'd like to change that, of course you can.
That throws a slightly different light on it, but then I'd want to see of the common property upon all members of the body corporate. This infers that it could be just a section of...
It almost inevitably is just a section. These are exclusive use rules, and they are a type of rule that will give either one person the right to park always in one particular place. They might also, it can also be used to give special rights to a group of people. For example, a lift that serves only one building where the other buildings don't have lifts. You might make that lift subject to exclusive use in favor of that group of people. That's more commonly known as limited common property. But so this is quite a flexible tool. At the moment, it is possible to do it either by unanimous or by special resolution. So we just need to have a look. That's how it's been working fairly well, and one doesn't want to mess with it. If you now say it can only be done by special resolution, you would be sort of restricting something that's been quite useful in the past.
What about the abuse? The concern is on the one side. What about the abuse? As Mr. Stein is his consent to address his consent.
Madam Chair, there isn't really a possibility of abuse because you're either going to need a unanimous or a special resolution. So whilst Honourable Stain was arguing for a special resolution, it is either that or even higher level of agreement.
The unfortunate part of it, you will not be there, Professor, when these things are happening on the ground. It's good that you are explaining to us now and we understand you, but you won't be there when things are happening there on the ground. But you raised something that raised my curiosity on those rules, management versus conduct rules. So I don't know. Are those issues already been, because I've not read about them.
Madam Chair, if I suggest, address the issue of clarity. If you said may make management or conduct rules which confer rights, that would then make it clear to people that either of those two sets of rules could be used.
Corporate may make
management or conduct
management
rules.
Conduct
rules. Okay. Chair, I'm not sure if rules in terms of the clause 2.2 is management or conduct, so I don't know whether that will really solve the problem. Is it, and it was mentioned that it may be unanimous or by special resolution, but is it just inferred that the original rules, I read this as there's a set of rules and the body corporate now makes a rule giving a person or a group of people access to special parking, for example. Will that necessarily have to go via a special resolution?
The only way you can make a rule is either by unanimous resolution or special resolution. Whilst there are people who misunderstand it, uneducated people who think trustees can make rules, in fact, in terms of this and the existing Act, only the body corporate can make rules, and there's only two types of rules they can make: management and conduct. The one requires a unanimous resolution, the other requires a special resolution. Both of them require, in this context, to be approved by the Chief Ombud and to be filed in his office before they become effective. So there are a number of checks and balances to address the concern of abuse that you have mentioned.
No, Chair, I'm covered. With regards to the rules that have been approved, that will speak to the problems that we wanted to address.
Eight, the rules contemplated in subsection 7 must A, include a layout plan to scale on which is clearly indicated. Roman figure 1, the locality of the distinctively numbered exclusive use and enjoyment paths, and Roman figure 2, the purposes for which such paths may be used. B, and include a schedule indicating to which owner each part, to which owner each such part is allocated. 9. Rules decided on by unanimous resolution under the repealed Section of Titles Act 1971 or any other provision before 1 June 1988, replacing rules contained in Schedule 1 to that Act, and at a set date not yet been lodged with the Registrar as contemplated in Section 27, Subsection 3 of that Act, lapsed on that date, and such rules are considered. And such rules are considered to have been replaced, subject to addition, amendment, or repeal, as contemplated in subsection 2, subsection A, by prescribed amendment rules contemplated in that subsection. 10. A. Amended rules contained in Schedule 1 to the repealed Sectional Titles Act 1971 or any other provision and applying immediately prior to 1 June 1988 in respect of any scheme lapsed on that date, and such rules are considered to have been replaced, subject to addition, amendment, or repeal as contemplated in Subsection 2A, by prescribed management rules contemplated in that subsection. B, unaltered rules contained in Schedule 2 to the repealed Sectional Titles Act 1971 or any other provision, and so applying in respect of any scheme lapsed on that date, and such rules are considered to have been replaced, subject to addition, amendment, or repeal as contemplated in subsection 2B, by prescribed conduct rules contemplated in that subsection.
Okay, again, there's just both A and B, just an explanation, because I'm not sure if it means that it talks to the amendment of the Sectional Titles Act and certain dates and rules being having expired or something. So I'm a bit worried that, for example, the complex that Member Toza owns, whether those rules are still valid at this point, or whether it's... So if they can explain these two paragraphs, please.
We have been very lucky to have the Chief State Law Advisor bring these provisions from the old act into this one and rework them so that they make a lot more sense, but they are hard to understand. Under the original Sectional Titles Act 66 of 1971, there were Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 rules. In the process of the second generation Sectional Titles Act, which came into effect on the 1st of June 1988, there was a process where those rules, if they hadn't been altered, were replaced entirely. If they had been altered, they were replaced to the extent that they were irreconcilable. So there was a process that had to be gone through. And really, this long piece of wording is technically legally necessary to illustrate what rules are applicable to any particular scheme, more especially those schemes that were registered before the 1st of June 1988.
Any rules other than rules referred to in subsection 10, which applies in respect of a scheme immediately prior to 1 June 1988, must subject to such substitution, addition, amendment, or repeal as contemplated subsection 2A or B, as the case may be, remain in force after the set date, except to the extent that any such rule may be irreconcilable with any prescribed management rules contemplated in subsection 2A, in which case the management rules concerned applies, provided that any such rules were as from 1st June 1988 considered to be supplemented by any rule made in the prescribed management rules which is not provided for in such rules. Any rules made under the Sectional Titles Act are be deemed to have been made under this Act.
Sectional title is no longer dealing, after we have passed this, is no longer dealing with the management of the scheme. We need our rules here that are based on the management of the scheme. Why are we saying they are going to be deemed to have been made under this Act? It means now you are closing the opportunity to...
Madam Chair, we have approximately 65,000 existing sectional title schemes that have their own rules. Those rules need to be brought forward into this new dimension you speak of, and in future all rules will be made under this Act, but you can't strip away from those schemes the rules that they already have. And the process, what one says is you are considering those rules to be made under this Act, so they're now controlled exactly as you want under this Act. They were in fact made under Act 66 of 1971 and Act 95 of 1986, and this is simply a legal device so that you now control them from this place. You are doing exactly what you want to do, which is to take control of those rules from here by saying this.
As rules,
they are saying those rules for now, they are still under the Sectional Title Act. But in the end, any rules made under the Sectional Titles Act are be deemed to have been made under this Act. That was my query. But if I had a would know, we cannot just feel cuttish. Until such time they are brought forward to this Act, under this Act. And that one you have a cleaner. Ongi?
Yeah, you're correct, Chairperson. This is mainly a transitional provision to cater for the existing. What is going to happen between now up until the minister make rules in terms of this Act? So you want to carry over those rules to still remain applicable up until the minister make rules in terms of this.
Kutwe zenzwa yi developer okanye yi corporate board ibe isenzisa ku home board as approved. Then the regulations is something else. Sifuna ukwazi ngokuthi when are they supposed to, when is clarified loan now, ukuthi kwenzekani kule transition period. Siyavumelana ukuthi zisahleli pha, zizawuza kanjani apha. Sifuna
is the question how they're physically going to be transferred? Yes. The Department of Housing and the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform are going to have to liaise one with the other so as to actually physically take those rules from the deeds officers to the chief ombudsman. I think it is also possible that they might just work together because those things are currently being held in safe custody. So the details of that haven't been worked out yet.
Nothing major. It's just on the 12th, the word B I think should be omitted in the he wanted to when he read. And then in line 40, I'm not sure if it says supplemented by any rule made. I'm not sure if that word made is necessary there. Sorry, Chair, I was saying, I may be wrong here, in line 40, I was going to suggest that the word may be deleted. And then in 12, the word be.
So we're saying,
conduct rules as prescribed. Which rules? Must it subject to? Ne, what are you saying? What are you suggesting there?
In line 40.
I'm in line 40.
Okay, it says to be supplemented by any rule made in the. I'm suggesting that the word may be deleted. It reads by any rule in the prescribed management rules.
Oh, and which rules may be? And then which rules? You are saying let's delete maybe. Or maybe. Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
I think also, Chair, you know, just to inform, you know, Honorable Stein, that in the proposed amendment that was already circulated yesterday, you know, we have also proposed that on page 10 in 940 to omit made. I think you are correct there to say that we have already proposed that.
We're now dealing with, sorry, I think even page in number 42. Number 12, any rules made under the sectional title H are deemed, can we remove that B, deemed? We're now moving to the session that deals with effect of quotas.
Okay, I'm just thinking, Chair, earlier on we had a discussion I think the Honorable Botha raised the issue about selling of property and the share. The selling of property, Chair, you have a value and therefore it's an investment. And then you did indicate, but however we'll debate this issue. But I was just thinking that since you're selling the property and you have the share, there should be a monetary value. Is it not a principle that perhaps might be in the rules? I'm just...
in practice, I believe that people know when the body corporate owns another property, and they will increase the price because there's that use associated with it. I don't believe it's necessary to put something in the Act in that regard. Nor in the rules. I don't believe that that is necessary. I believe that human nature will look after, that people will ask a price which reflects any ancillary use rights, because those use rights transmit automatically.
Human nature is difficult to guarantee. You cannot rely on human nature. Human nature changes.
There's one thing that never changes about human nature, and that is we don't give away things that we own without getting something back for them.
If you can read that one, where is it now? On 12, any rules made under the Section of Tagli Act are deemed to have been made. Again, there's too much made. In any case where the vote is to be reckoned in value, B, the undivided share in the common property of the owner of the section, and C, subject to section 3, subsection 1B, the proportion in which the owner of the section may make contributions for the purposes of section 3, subsection 1A, or may, in terms of section 14, subsection 1, be held liable for the payment of a judgment debt of the body corporate of which he or she is a member.
One of the favorite ones, and under C, should that not be a must?
Where is this document you keep on referring to? Okay. Because Amina also made some corrections like May and all those things. Thank you. 2A, subject to section 3, subsection 1B, the developer may, when submitting an application for the opening of a sectional title register, in terms of the Sectional Titles Act, or the members of the body corporate may by special resolution make rules under section 9 by which a different value is attached to the vote of the owner of any section or the liability of the owner of any section to make contributions for the purposes of section 3 subsection 1A or section 14 subsection 1 is modified. B. Where an owner is adversely affected by such a decision of the body corporate, his or her written consent must be obtained. C.
Uh, by such a decision of the body corporate. His or her, should we not say prior written consent must be obtained? Or is...
That's a good question.
Don't you think it will be better if we have that document, because we'll keep on stopping and say at this word and all that. See, the members of the body corporate may not make rules by which a different value is attached to the vote or liability of the owner of any section as contemplated in paragraph A until such time as there are owners other than the developer of at least 30% of the units in the scheme. D. Where the developer alienates a unit before the opening of a sectional title register, in terms of the Sectional Titles Act, the developer may not make rules by which a different value is attached to the vote or liability of the owner of any section, as contemplated in paragraph A, unless the developer has disclosed such intention in all deeds of alienation. Expropriation of common property. Section 11, subsection 1A. Whenever the whole or any part of or any right in the common property is expropriated in terms of any law, service of a notice of expropriation on the body corporate is considered to be service thereof on the registered owner of every section in the building or buildings concerned. B. Each and every such owner is considered to have appointed the trustees of the body corporate concerned as his or her duly authorized agents and representatives. Roman figure 1. To negotiate and settle the compensation payable to him or her, and to that end to employ attorneys, advocates, and other experts. And Roman figure 2, on his or her behalf to receive and give valid acquittance for any compensation money paid. 2, any compensation monies received by the trustees on behalf of the owners in terms of subsection 1 must be paid to the owners in accordance with their participation quotas after they have received notice of such distribution in writing, provided that an owner may notify the trustees before such monies are so distributed that he or she considers such a distribution inequitable, in which event the compensation monies must be distributed. A. In accordance with a division approved by unanimous resolution, or B. In accordance with a division approved by an arbitrator, being a practicing advocate or attorney of not less than 10 years standing, nominated by the trustees.
Under 2, we talk about having given notice to the owners about the distribution in writing. Then we say provided that an owner may notify the trustees before such monies are to be distributed, are so distributed, should we not specify a period, within a certain period, after, say, the notification, and not leave it so open-ended? So,
Mr. Stein, I'm disappointed. I thought you were going to say, why doesn't this go to the ombud?
Go
Duties of owners, section 12, subsection 1, an owner must A. Can I continue?
Yeah. Check, was the suggestion about the period accepted? Is something going to be done about that? Yes.
A. Permit any person authorized in writing by the body corporate during reasonable hours and on notice, except in case of emergency when no notice is required, to enter his or her section or exclusive use area for the purposes of inspecting it and maintaining, repairing or renewing pipes, wires, cables and ducts existing in the section and capable of being used in connection with the enjoyment of any other section or common property, or for the purpose of ensuring that this act and the rules are being observed. B. Forthwith, carry out all work that may be ordered by any competent public or local authority in respect of his or his section, other than such work as may be required for the benefit of the building generally, and pay all charges, expenses, and assessments that may be payable in respect of his or her section. C. Repair and maintain his or her section in a state of good repair and in respect of an exclusive use area. Keep it in a clean and neat condition. D. Use and enjoy the common property in such a manner as not to interfere unreasonably with the use and enjoyment thereof by other owners or other persons lawfully on the premises. E. Not use his or her section or exclusive use area or permit it to be used in a manner or for a purpose which may cause a nuisance to any occupier of a section. F. Notify the body corporate forthwith of any change of ownership in his or her section and of any mortgage. And G, when the purpose for which a section or exclusive use area is intended to be used is shown expressly or by implication on or by a registered sectional plan, not use nor permit such section or exclusive use area to be used for any other purpose, provided that with the written consent of all owners, such section or exclusive use area may be used for that purpose as consented to. (laughs) 12.1G.
Thank you.